What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Podcast. And in today's episode, I'm joined with the brand new Maxine's Challenge coach. We've got Coach Nick joining us today. Nick, welcome to the Challenge Podcast.
Hi, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm really well. How are you doing today?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good.
Look, I'm excited to introduce you to our Challenge community. But I guess the first question I have, Nick, is how do you pronounce your name?
Oh, the whole lot of it?
Yes.
Nicoletta Cepellini.
Nicoletta Cepellini.
Yeah, if you want to do that. Or if you just go Nick Chep.
Nick Chep. I feel like I just want to use my hand to say your name, or maybe two hands. Like, yeah,
it's very Nicoletta. Nicoletta Cepellini, you know, that's the way to do it. You know, it's very, very long.
Very long. So I'm gonna assume that you are Italian.
Yes. So my dad is Italian. My husband is not. So his name is actually Smith. But so my kids are Smith, but I'm Cepellini. So Italian background. So very passionate. So that's, you know, a lot of passion goes into everything that's Italian. So that's me.
I love that. Yeah. Look, Nick, would you like to start us off by telling us a little bit about yourself? So maybe telling us, you know, who is Nick, where are you from, and what do you do, those types of things?
Okay, so I am from Melbourne. I have really live and breathe fitness now. It's been my life for probably the last nearly 13 years. So my eldest daughter is 13 years old. Even prior to giving birth, I was a very active person. But during the birth process, I really got into Pilates, and then I realized that I was quite competitive, because on that reformer bed, I had to be the best on the reformer, and you know, even the best pregnant person, you know, doing the most stuff. So it was like, hang on a minute, I hadn't really looked into that at school, so I wasn't very sporty or anything. I sort of used my academic side and got lots of uni qualifications and stuff. And then after the girls were born, I sort of started going to the gym a little bit, doing group fitness classes, really getting involved in that, doing some spin classes, and then like producing some really good output in the spin. So the instructor was like, oh, you're good at this. I'm like, well, I'm good at something in the gym, what? So then, you know, because a lot of people don't really want to teach cycle because it's really hard on your body. So I just decided to teach every class that I could, day, night, in between, you know, the kids being little. And then suddenly it became a thing. So I became good at teaching cycle. It became my absolute job all the time. So I was just back to back, you know, even up to about 20 classes a week. I don't know how I did that, but really got out there, met the whole of Melbourne, you know, made it my mission to just be the best that I could be. And in the meantime, decided to, you know, get all my qualifications in fitness, you know, personal training as well, and just start a whole like new career for myself. Yeah. So and in the meantime, I was also doing the triathlons, and decided to do the big Ironman when it was the last time it was in Melbourne. So that was really cool. It consisted of like a run to St Kilda from Frankston. So if anyone's familiar with that area, it's a long way to run. You know, it's a marathon at the end of everything else. So that was a challenge that I was able to complete, which is always one of my, I think I look back and think that was something that really transformed me as well. Because if I ever talk to people about resilience, it's something that I can draw on and go, how did I get through that particular thing? And how does that now drive me as a person? So, yeah.
Yeah, wow. You kind of dumped a lot about you in
one spiel. I know.
Let's break it down a little bit. Let's unpack. So you, I guess, were first introduced to fitness through Pilates, right?
Yeah, very initially. So that, yeah, that's like you teach, you know, you're a Pilates person, so you know the benefits of Pilates, and it's quite addictive. It's really just that movement, and it's actually harder than you think, which is fantastic. Like it's quite challenging.
Yeah. So you didn't really come from a sporty or fitness background until you were pregnant and started doing Pilates?
Yeah, not really, because my big driver was, for me, what I wanted to do was be able to really be like, have a really active birth for mm-hmm. both my children. So I knew that to do that for me, I had to put in a lot of work to get my body ready. So mm-hmm. I did a lot of workshopping and a lot of a lot of connection with my body, with movement, with endurance type stuff that it takes for that type of a birth. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do that twice. And then initially I thought, okay, what do I want to do? I want to help women give birth. But that was a little bit much for me when I got into that area. And that's how I then sort of moved on to getting into fitness, because fitness was something really not as risky and a bit more positive. And like, you can immediately impact people. So I think that's why fitness resonated with me. And also because my family, my dad and brother are paramedics and things, it was always, they were the body people. And my mum and I were sort of the brainy ones, you know, the academic ones. So I didn't really get a chance when I was younger to pursue too many like sporty things. It was more about just getting all the info in my brain.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about what you did, I guess, before. So you keep kind of referring to university and academics and stuff. Like, what kind of background are we talking about here?
So creative writing was initially where I kind of found myself going to. And then I ended up doing visual culture and communications. And I did my honours thesis on gender in Australia and identity in Australian film and what that meant. And then I sort of led on to doing creative writing and ended up kind of, I guess that's why I love to write things on social media. And that's how I see, that's what the purpose of that was, to kind of to learn in a formal sense how to structure something, and also just grammar and stuff, which is really, it's actually really helpful in the real world to be able to structure something nicely. So I find that works now for my business and for other things that I do. So I can put together something quite quickly. So now I look back and think that's why I did that. And also to be able to relate to lots of different people, because I've read widely and I love reading and I love writing. So therefore in my classes or in things that I'll do, I like to reference different cultural things as well. So just to keep people entertained, different music, you know, it doesn't have to just be about the body, it can be about the mind as well, and just make things a bit like a bit of fun as well. It doesn't just have to be one facet. Yeah. I think that's what keeps people interested.
I think that's really cool, because, you know, when we consider fitness and health, most people often, you know, have a certain image that they think of, like, you know, the meathead in the gym, or the cardio bunny on the exercise, or like the, you know, their certain image of what it is. And when we think of the fitness coach, you know, we're often like, you know, tunnel, put in a picture box, maybe like tunnel vision of, you know, this is what this person does. But I think we often miss like all the skills before we became that, and how that kind of shaped who we are now. And, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, all these previous studies you did, such as writing and gender studies and maybe cultural studies and visual communication and all these things. I wonder what all these little skills you picked up over time and how you, you know, unconsciously apply that now. Like, have you thought about some of these things that you might have picked up? And you kind of said it already, where, you know, maybe different cultural aspects and interacting with people. Have you thought about how, like, all these little skills you picked up through your academic career have unconsciously translated to your ability to motivate people, your ability to create connections in class, and, you know, I guess around that personal touch with people? Like, can you speak a little bit about that, about some things that you might have learned and picked up?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think that every single thing that I've ever done has led me to every moment of every class or every interaction with every client, because it's sort of this build-up of history that if I didn't have that, just say I started when I was straight out of school doing fitness, which is great as well, but I would not have this sort of foundation that makes me who I am. So it just means that I'm able to just go a little bit broader and kind of, you know, I guess when I'm interacting with someone for the first time or with a class or with people that I've known for a long time, I can kind of pinpoint where they might be coming from, what kind of a learner they might be, what kind of cues they might need, how they might need to feel to be motivated, because not everybody is the same. Not everybody wants to be screamed at, and not everybody wants the gentle approach either. But there has to be some sort of a middle ground, but there also has to be layers upon that. So the only way that I know that I've learned how to do all of this is from the background that I have. And also, one good thing that came out of all this university stuff is being able to research really quickly. So like if you said to me, I need you to look up this is happening now, I could pretty quickly find, you know, an article on it and who wrote it and whether it's a decent source and that kind of thing. So like for evidence-based stuff, that's really helpful, I find. Just that quick research ability, which I'm hoping that the next generations to come, I'm trying to teach my kids as well, just to be able to read and research and be able to pick up things quickly and look for things and look a bit deeper. And that translates so well to fitness as well, because one size does not fit all. And you know, anyone that sort of like, just like academics, you know, you have to come at it with different approaches. You might have a belief, but you certainly need to figure out how everything fits into that.
Yeah. I think
I haven't really thought about it, but now that I have, that's the answer.
Yeah. I think I often reflect from my previous experiences and, you know, other avenues outside of fitness and how they kind of direct me when I'm creating programs, coaching people, mm-hmm. thinking about the body, coaching myself, mm-hmm. these types of things. And often we don't think about it, but we are a combination of all of our previous experiences. And that could be, you know, all the friends you've made in the past, maybe your personal experiences with weight loss, family, with competitions, with sport, and they kind of interplay with our ability to coach, because at the end of the day, you know, we're coaching people, and sure, it helps that you and I are more trained in things and we understand the human body and we understand program design and nutrition and all these things. That's just, you know, they're easy things. They're things we can learn. And especially what you said, we're in the information age. If anything, we're closer to the disinformation age, because there's so much information at our fingertips. We kind of need that skill to be able to critically analyze stuff and maybe put our own biases aside or our own opinions aside and go, okay, well, what's the research saying? What's the evidence saying? Balance that out with what our anecdotal experience works, and then, you know, expectations, all these other things in between. But you really, really nailed it there. But look, talking about experiences, you know, you've kind of mentioned children. What was it like as you kind of transitioned both into fitness and then into motherhood? Like, that would have been a very big change in your identity. Like, what was that like, you know, going and doing more group fitness classes as well as having newborns? Can you speak a little bit about that?
Well, at the time, gyms were, they were still having creches. Like, a lot of that's been cut out now with the new sort of gym models where the 24/7 get people in, get out. But there's still quite a few gyms that have got creches, which is wonderful. But I was lucky. I had a gym just around the corner from me that had wonderful creche. The girls were able to go in there together, because some creches used to separate the kids, and that was I didn't feel right doing that. So I had that lined up for me. I had the right kind of support, which you need to whenever you're embarking on anything. How are you going to get anywhere unless you've got a bit of a support network? It doesn't even have to be necessarily the close family, because say my husband was at work, so he had to work. You know, I had my mum, she was great, she is great, and my dad, but they live suburbs away. So to be able to have that creche, that was really good. And also to be able to say to myself, it's okay that it's an hour and a bit. They're with me the rest of the time. I need this so then I can be happy and be a good mum. So I kind of cottoned onto that pretty quickly. I cottoned onto the physical exercise thing for me is something that makes me feel better. And that's why I still do my spin at 5:45 with the people in my shed now, you know, that kind of a thing. And those classes, because without it, even though we're meant to rest and everything, but I just know mentally the endorphins and other things help me. So that was a good way to transition into being a mum, because at first I just went, because I'd done all the birth stuff and I thought like, oh yeah, I'm good for me. Yeah. You know, but then when they're out, it's like, oh, what happens now? So I did go through just loss of identity because I'd been working. I'd also worked in advertising, because when you do writing, you pretty much end up working in advertising. So it was quite fast paced. I would go at the time to Sydney a lot. I would have a company credit card. We would have work drinks. It was crazy. And suddenly I was at home in my house in Burwood with my daughter going, what do I do? I didn't even really want to go. Didn't want to go to mothers groups or anything. I wish more people spoke about this, because a lot of people like just go, oh, it's the best thing ever. But for me, my first one, Lucia, like at first I was just a bit lost. So when I found the gym, I found a community. I found other women that were like-minded. They wanted to lift weights, or they wanted to do a class, like a spin class. And then we all had kids, so we might take them to have a coffee. And it was like, oh my gosh, we don't have to just talk about nappies. We can talk about everything. How was that spin class? What was going on? And then when I got to be the instructor, that was so much fun, because it was like suddenly I was teaching all my friends at first. So, and it was, I felt so empowered. And then I thought, this is where I'm meant to be. And now I always think about how much the gym and that kind of environment is good for people's mental health. Even when we were locked down, you know, how there was a big push, you know, gyms are good for mental health. Well, I can absolutely attest to that, because without that becoming, I guess, my new identity in a way, I don't know what I would do. Like, I'm just looking at this photo now, which has got my kids giving me a cuddle after one of my triathlons, and it's just funny because I hadn't looked at it for a while, but see, they kind of just got used to me being that mum that would just be doing that. So they're like their little pink coats, they were on the beach with me all the time, and so that's how they kind of grew up. So now they're like, oh, what are you doing now? What are you doing now, mum? But yeah, so that became my identity, and I was lucky enough to have a supportive family. My husband would take them to the beach, the poor guy, because it's actually really boring, I realise. And also to try and get them to not run on the road while the bikes are going past and stuff, and to chill, because you only go past it like once every hour or something. But so that just became what I could do. And then now that I can actually get paid to do this, I still pinch myself every day, because it's like, wait a minute. This is actually, I still don't feel like it's work. No. Like even if we had, just say there was something that was going on at midnight, I would be like, yeah, no worries, because it's fun to me still, which is strange after 13 years, but yeah, it's actually fun.
Could you tell us a little bit about what it's like when you transitioned into fitness? And what I mean by that is, you know, you kind of say that you were, you know, going to group fitness classes, and you were getting you're going there for the community, you were getting fitter yourself, and you were doing well, as in, you know, you said that your instructor was saying that you were like quite active in the group and stuff. What was it like when you kind of went from that position of, you know, I am the person in the class, to now being like the leader of the class? Like, was it an easy transition, or did you have any challenges as you went from the you know, fit person to now the personal trainer, or the participant to now like the leader of the group? Can you speak about that?
Well, there were parts of me that were super confident, because I've always been a bit of a performer. So even at school, I used to love to do singing, and I would like want to be the lead, and I'd really, you know, want to be the top of that. So, and I got to play my music in the class. So like that just became like, it was a giant performance. Mm-hmm. So, in a way, for maybe about 3 or 4 or 5 years of teaching, I was a character. You know, it's only been recently that I've kind of revealed who I really am. Mm-hmm. But so I just created a character. But I'll tell you what I used to do. I used to walk into class really early and put my shoes on the bike, because I didn't want to spend ages trying to clip in and make it look like I was weird. So I'd do all sorts of stuff like that, and I'd have like OCD about setting up the mic and the stereo and other stuff. But other than that, look, everybody around me was really supportive. So they all liked the classes. So they kind of became very addicted to it. So I was kind of lucky in that way that I started off like that. But then I set myself challenges, and I still do. It's like I need to be able to go out there to a full room of people I don't know and still check if I've got it, like if I can do it still. So I'm constantly doing that. But also in the meantime, while I was teaching that, I also had a coach that kind of mentored me in the weights area. And he would say, you know, you can do both. You can do your triathlons and your weights. But when I started to say to him, look, I want to squat 100 kilos, this was after the Ironman, he was like, okay, so if you want to do that, you might have to, there might have to be a little bit of give and take with all your endurance stuff. And that's when I started to ease into the powerlifting. So, but I always seemed to have people behind me that were very confident in my abilities. And that really helped me, because without that, I don't really know how I would have felt. And I've still got that around me. I've still got I've surround myself with people that really believe in what I can do and how I make them feel, but also like even coaches and things that are like, now, if you stick with this, you'll go far. So, you know, it's always good to have people in your corner, you know, no matter how high up you get, you've got to have your support network.
Yeah. So I guess maybe another little philosophical question, when you are in those, you know, goal orientated pursuits, such as doing an Ironman and, you know, we can touch on maybe a bit of powerlifting, maybe a bit of bodybuilding and these other like, you know, goal driven events. Do you find that you are leaning onto this support network, or do you find that you are pepping yourself up to kind of do it for them? Like, for example, like a coach, you know, you don't want to give up because you don't want to upset your coach, right? You don't want to, you don't want to stop the triathlon, or don't want to not squat that 100 kilos because you almost want to do it for them. So do you find that you are, you know, getting energy off of your support network, or are you building yourself up so that you could do it for them? Like, have you thought about that before?
Look, the thing is, at the end of the day, it's down to me. So I am actually a very, it's, even though I've said about my support network, I'm a very lone wolf. So like, I will, if I want to do something, at the, like, millions of, someone can say you can do it, but unless I believe that I can do it, or unless I really want to do it, I ain't gonna do it. Like, it's just, say, like, when I used to power lift, and it would, my Achilles heel was around about like the 150 kilos. It's like I could do the 140 every day for a deadlift, but if I was 150, I would go. And if I could not see it done, it wouldn't matter about the pats on the back, the slaps, you can do it. Yeah. That actually annoyed me at that point. Like, when you get to that pointy level where you're going to have to give everything, and it's going to have to come from like a really, like, a place that it's hard to even visit, that has to be that at the, like, the very end of it all, it has to be you that does it, and you almost let go of everyone else, and you've got to do it for yourself. But to get there, and just for the daily grind, then 100% like, lean on those people. But then, like, on the big events, like for the Ironman, for example, like, I saw people waving at me and things, but I guess I was sometimes counting on some friends seeing me like every couple of Ks or something. But after a while, I just went right into my zone, and it was like I had to finish it just because I bloody well had to. Like, I really didn't have an answer. I saw people kind of falling over around me, and I'm like, well, I've just got to keep going. And that's that, like, that, just that deep internal strength. Yeah. So like, I would say ultimately every single thing that I do comes down to my decision to do it or not.
Yeah.
At the very end of the day. Yeah. And if I want it, I will absolutely do it. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like one of those, you know, you put your mind to it's going to happen, right?
And it needs to be real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like almost some similarity, like whenever like I decide like, you know, this is going to happen, like it rolls out, right? So like, you know, let's talk about the Ironman. Like, did you like, firstly, like, when was that point where you said, yeah, I'm going to do this? You know, like, were you a cyclist before? Were you, well, I mean, RPM, were you a swimmer before? Were you a runner before? Like, when did you decide, yep, I'm going to do this? And then talk to me about that journey. Like, you know, did you do any practice runs? Did you run like a half marathon or anything like that? And like, you know, what led you up to that day? And then what was the day like doing the Ironman?
Okay. So, I started off just doing really little triathlons, and it was really funny because my coach at the time, who was also like my mentor with spin, she said, you should do triathlons. She just said, oh, you're really good on the indoor bike. So she lent me her husband's bike and off we go onto Beach Road. And I actually couldn't get on the bike. I was that scared. And she didn't realize that that was going to happen to me. And neither did I, because I wasn't a bike rider. So we had to get through that hurdle where I had all this fear about hopping on the bike. So I actually had to learn how to ride again before I even could do the 180 Ks of the Ironman. I had to take it right back and learn how to ride again. Swimming I'd been naturally quite good at, and I was lucky that I worked at an aquatic center with an outdoor pool. So I would train with one of my friends who was doing that, and we would do a run together before. We'd do about 8 or 9 Ks every morning before my spin class. We'd do my spin, then we'd go for a swim. So a little bit backwards, but we'd get it all done. So I did quite a lot of training, not in a squat or anything, but just it ended up, the hours added up, you know. And so, but yeah, so I had to learn how to ride. And I did quite a few of the littler triathlons. And the reason that I ended up doing the big one was because I won a couple of the little ones. So I thought, oh, I'm pretty shit hot at this. I thought I'm very good at triathlons, obviously, not knowing that the bigger distances are like they'll eat you alive. But so I did a half Ironman, and actually that was it was a challenge. That's the same kind of thing. It just doesn't have the same brand. But that was also in Melbourne. That was, I felt really good on that. So that was a half marathon. That was half the distance of everything, and 90K bike, 1.8K swim. And the beach was like massive, and it was dark at the time, and it was just crazy. There's a video of it. Yeah, insane. And I did that. I did a half marathon with my mum as well prior as a training thing, because mum comes to all my spins. So she's really active and has always been a runner. So we did that together. So there were a few different like markers leading up to that big day. But to be honest, it was a bit of a wing and a prayer. It was like, I signed up and I'm going to go through with it and it's just going to happen. And that is what happened. So like it's like a long haul flight. Like you go, I'll never do that again, and then a few years later you go, I want to do that again. But that's me now. It's like after the bodybuilding, I'm going to do, if they have it in Melbourne, they're supposed to have the half Ironman at the end of this year, so I'm going to do that as something like something a bit different, because I haven't done it for a while. But I did train a lot for that. It was just that volume. And it was also what you really want to do is you want to make sure that you're comfortable in the open water. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to, like, swimming in a pool is different to swimming in the open water. People panic a little bit. So you've got to get your breath. You've got to figure out your wetsuit, your breath. And then with the running, it's just about finding a tempo that you can sustain for that amount of time. That's also not going to give you a massive injury, because that's what you've got to watch out for with this long stuff, is that wear and tear on your body.
Yeah. What was it like with the transition from like the swim to the run? Like, swim to the cycle and the run? Did you like get changed? Did you dry yourself? Like, how does that work?
You have to. Well, in the small ones, you don't. Like, in the small ones, I didn't even wear socks. Like, I was taught and trained, you don't wear socks. You're a badass. You know, that was, you just had to be as quick as possible. But in the really big one, they have people that help you. Yeah, like, you've got your own person that you have a bag, and they get your bag and they help you and they put your socks on and they put sunscreen on you. And it's like a day out, like for a month. You're like, actually, I'm having some time out here.
It's like, I'm going to the spa, but I'm going to go run a marathon.
Exactly. Yeah. All I have to do to earn this time out is just do like this whole big event. But the transition, that was really good. Like, I commend those people, because I actually think they're volunteers, but they do such a good job. And so, and they're at all the drink stations. And there was one point where I was struggling a little bit at one of the drink stations on the bike. And I knew that, like, if I didn't show that I was A1, they'd probably send that SAG wagon to get me. So I'm like, hello, I'm really good. Yeah, I'm great. And I thought to myself, I'm not great. But I'm like, may I partake of one of your gels, please? You know, and I'm thinking, oh God, you know, and I just thought, just don't look at me. And so I got through, because I thought, like, they do come and pick you up if you're a bit struggle. So it was, looking back, it's like, oh Lord. But, you know, There's nothing you can't do if you've done that, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah. The only comparison I had to that is I've run a marathon. And my story in a very short stint was, I guess I was always a weightlifter, and someone made a snide comment to me being like, oh, you're too big to run, as in like too muscular to run. And I was never a runner. I was never anything like that. And I was like, you know what? I reckon I could do this. And at the time I had an ACL reconstruction surgery, and I was studying rehabilitation as an osteopath. And I was like, well, yeah, I could rehab myself. So part of my rehab process, and to prove this person wrong, was I started running after my surgery once I got the clearance. And I built myself up to a point where I was able to run a 10K. And I was like, okay, this isn't that hard. Like, all right. Then on a whim, I signed up to the marathon, because I don't do things half-assed, right?
No.
So yeah. I signed up to the marathon, and I hadn't run a long distance. The longest I ran was about 30 kilometers before the actual marathon event. And then I remember the actual day where I was surprised about how many people that were much more out of shape than I was running the marathon, who were much older than I was. And these people were ahead of me, right, running along. And there was definitely those mental moments where, you know, I had that self-talk of, oh, just give up. Who are you doing this for? Like, you know, no one's going to know if you quit, And I found that, like, once I broke through that wall, it was around that, like, 30, 35 kilometer mark, I found like this, you know, second or third or fourth wind, or I can't remember how many like little oomphs I got, but it was like this energy that I didn't know I had kind of like came to me. And that last maybe like 5 kilometers was my fastest 5 kilometers in the whole marathon itself, where like I was able to find something deeper just to kind of push me through. So like, could you relate a little bit to that? Like that, you know, did you reach that moment in the Ironman where you kind of felt like, oh, you know, I wanted to give up, or it was really hard, it was really driving, but then maybe like that last little bit, maybe you saw your family, maybe you saw the finish line, you're like, you got this burst of energy, and you know, you were able to complete it. Like, does that resonate with you?
Oh, 100%. But also what you said before, and it's so interesting because I was actually thinking about this today, but the thing of where you go, nobody will know if I quit. See, the thing is now, say with us, we're a bit more out there. So if people know what we're going to do, they know it. There's no chance. So there's no more, there's never a safety net anymore for the nobody will know, unless you just keep everything in your head 24/7, but you can't anymore. So that's so interesting, because there's no more safety barrier. It's like you're so vulnerable, but that's actually where you find out what you're really made of. But
and that almost drives you now, because you're like, well, I can't give up, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's on those deep moments where you go, well, I might give up, but then now there's no choice. So, and everybody does that. That's the thing. Everybody has a moment where they think that it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how successful you are or anything like that. I don't think anybody should ever think that it doesn't matter what you've done. Every single time you might have a moment where you give up, or even every day you might go, I don't feel like training today. And in a way, that's every time you do that sort of a thing and you don't do it, you are giving up a little bit. So, I think that happens to everyone. But yeah, the moment of truth for me with all those things, I always have something where there's always a bit of a dip. And like, especially if there are three laps of something, the second lap is just hideous. It's always the worst. It's like, you got to go, you know, that it's not coming, you know, that there's another lap left. But like, and then the third lap of something, or the last little bit of something, you can find that energy again. And that's actually a lot like childbirth, because it's the minute where you think that you can't do it anymore. And it's very well documented where people go, oh, I can't do this anymore. That's actually where people are about to, you're about to push, and it's time. So that's the same as with us with marathons or with anything where you just about go, I can't do it. And then that reserve kicks in. It's like a turbo in a car. You know, something, if you can break through that little bit, and I've gone through it with mum, she won't mind me telling, but when she went, she was doing her half marathon and it was about the 14K mark. And even though we'd practiced, I'd actually done a good job with this one. I'd practiced, we'd done, but she said to me all of a sudden out of the blue, I don't think I can keep doing this. And I'm like, what? And you know, that mum never says that about anything. So I had to help figure out how to mentally get her through, you know, to the bit where she got to go to the MCG, and that, like, that was a great bit, and it's great that we got through, but everyone goes through, and it's like, are you going to break through, or are you going to stand on the side of the road at one of those things and watch everyone else run by? How does it end?
Yeah.
Like, how would it actually end? Like, what, you'll stand there. Do you know that, like, you'd probably still have to walk back anyway?
You'd have to finish it.
Where does it end?
Yeah.
Because you could start to walk a little bit, but you'd still, the idea is, like, you still got to finish it because no one's coming to pick you up. Even your family can't get through in a car on those things. No. So where you, once you you're in, it's like a water slide. You just got to keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's very much like, you know, I was just thinking while you're talking, you know, of David Goggins, where he says that when your mind wants to give up, you're only 40% done. There's always that reserve. Yeah. So when you do want to throw in the towel, when you do want to stop doing something, like there is so much more. And, you know, making that analogy back to the challenge, right? You know, there's so many times where people want to throw in the towel and there's that dip. There's that dip, you know, that's, we see it all the time. Maybe that week six, week eight mark, we're 2/3 of the way through the challenge. We're on, you know, rep two of rep three, or we're on lap two of lap three, right? Yeah. It's that's when people want to throw in the towel. Right. You know, mentally we want to give up, but there's so much more. And, you know, making more analogies about what you said, like now we're a little bit more public than what we were, where in the past we were quite private. And in the challenge, we have those two options. You can sign up to the challenge privately and not post any photos, or you could sign up to the challenge very publicly. You could make social media accounts. You could post on our Facebook group. You could tell the world that you're doing this challenge, that you're going to lose weight. And if you make that public announcement, guess what? You're going to lose that weight, right? You know, there's no backing down. There's no way you're going to stop if you make that public announcement. And
that's right.
Yeah.
And people are there for you. That's the thing. Like a lot of people will go, oh, I don't, like this was used to be me. I don't want to make it public because nobody needs to know. Who would want to know about me? But it's like, if you don't know how many people you're actually helping, and within your own network, you don't know how many people you might be inspiring to go, I saw you do that. I decided to go for a walk today. Mm. And that, like, sometimes people will tell me that, and it's like, I did not even know. Did not even know that that was something. So it's like, it's almost like once you start to do this, and you see it in the challenge in the Facebook group, you know, the people that have done it before, and now with the mentors as well, it's like you take it on to help other people. It's paying it forward. That's my favorite bit about fitness, I think. And you know, people that have done the lap two and then gone into the lap three and like smashed it, they're the ones that go, look, that's the bit. This is that bit that we've got to help you through with. This is where you have that extra drink, you know, your extra drink of water, and you take a deep breath and you look around and you see who's helping you and you push forward.
Yeah, you know? I love that. Well, you know, let's talk about, you know, from that Ironman that you did, you kind of slowly transitioned into powerlifting, right? Can you think of maybe any lessons you learned while you were doing endurance events, like maybe those mental lessons? And then did you find that you applied them to powerlifting? Like maybe that idea of lap two of lap three, and then maybe, you know, rep two of rep three, or maybe that fear aspect, like, you know, swimming in open water or hopping on the bike can be fearful. Same as when you're staring at like your PB on the platform, like that 150 sharp end that you're talking about with the deadlift. Exactly. Like, did you learn any things from endurance events and then applied it to another fitness thing such as powerlifting? Like, can you speak a bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I was lucky because everybody thought, at the particular gym that I was training at the time, they're like, you've done an Ironman, you're a badass. So then they would go, oh my god, you can lift that much weight, you're a badass. So I just started to believe I was a badass. It's like, well, and then also what was really good, like in an actual practical thing, was all of the endurance that I'd done had actually banked up to be a really good threshold to then be able to lift weights and recover quite quickly. So I found that, and I still find that that's what I take from all the cardio that I do. I manage it by, you know, managing my nutrition, making sure that I'm taking in enough. But I find that recovery is good because I'm actually like a fit person. So that I took that with me to powerlifting. But also the thing is, I also took I'm 10 times more scared of getting on a bike. I'm happier to get on it if the roads are closed and, you know, no one's watching me. And like, but I don't love it. Like if people from my spin class want to go for a group ride, it'll take me a bit to psych myself up to do it. I like it when I'm doing it, but it's not like my absolute favorite. So I would wait, put put 120 kilos on my back or something like that and make me do it. I prefer to do that without catches. Mm-hmm. And I don't recommend that, but I'm just saying, like, if you know how to get rid of the butt, I prefer to do that than ride a big distance, because like weights, I can understand. I can kind of understand they make you, they break you. It's for me, it's a lot of fun and it's very thrilling. Mm-hmm. And it's something I really understand. So I still, even though I've done endurance, I still sometimes don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I still go, why? Why do we want to do that? Like, it's really hard and it takes ages. And, why shouldn't I just go into the gym for 1 or 2 hours and just do those other fun things? And they're so cool and so rewarding. And I love all the people around me. And so I still question. But so into powerlifting was a great time. It was a great time because I got to find out also about food and about how good it can be for you and how you've got to eat to fuel your body. And that was probably that was the first time as a woman that I kind of went, oh my gosh, this is, I'm starving and I'm going to honor that because I've lifted these weights and I want to grow and I want to be, huge and muscular. That's what I wanted, that was time of my life. And I'm so glad I had that time because it grew me obviously mentally, but also physically into something that then could transition into bodybuilding quite comfortably and like holding a very decent amount of muscle, that sort of thing, that maybe wasn't sculpted in the correct way, but it was all there, And so that's I would never trade that. And if just say someone said to me, you could go back to one point in your life of your training, I'd probably go back in to that in terms of just the way it made me feel, how empowering it was to walk up to that deadlift bar and be able to lift it and put that chalk on and even get, the cuts in your hands and other things. I never wore belts, never wore anything. I loved the feeling of everything. So that's my jam, I would say. Yeah. I might die doing that.
I think I can relate. I guess I've never competed formally in a powerlifting meet, but I guess I've dabbled with people and trained with people who lift in powerlifting competitions. And there's something so rewarding and so I guess you feel like Superman, I guess, when you've got like twice your body weight on your back, or you're trying to pick up close to three times your body weight, and you're like, yes, I'm like a machine, like I am an engine,
it's undeniable. It's undeniable. Yeah. And the community around you as well, everybody's so supportive of that kind of stuff. And strong women and that kind of community, it's amazing to see. It's a different, Not that the bodybuilding community is not supportive. It's just, it's a different vibe, because once you start getting into the bodybuilding one, everybody naturally is highly competitive in that one.
Yeah.
So they're going to be supportive, but they're also going to be in their own zone going, I'm going to be the best. I'm going to be the best. Whereas with powerlifting, it's like, what are you up to? Do you want to lift stuff?
I love that.
So that's just great. I love that. And I loved training at the gym that I was at the time, where like there was a leaderboard, so it was fun to try and get on that leaderboard and that sort of stuff. Like, that's very motivating weights wise because it's like, if you can lift really heavy weights, nobody can, you just feel untouchable, so that's really good. And also heavy, that's the thing, it doesn't have to necessarily be those massive numbers, it can be whatever pushes you. That's the thing. It doesn't have to be. It's like, even on the bike, I deal with watts, power to weight with watts, data. You would love it, actually, with the data. It's very data-y. So, and there's a place for everyone in that spectrum. And that's what I love as well about the gym and about that environment. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you've come from. There's a place for you there. And there's really no judgment, which is so refreshing. Yeah,
I think there's often a fear or maybe a barrier where people feel like they are going to get judged when they go to a gym. But like you said, you know, everyone, you know, there's a place for you everywhere. And you'll find that in the most competitive environments, they are also the most supportive environments and, you know, the most like biggest communities, right? And, you know, you would have seen it in powerlifting, you would have seen it in the Ironman, and you would have seen it when you were competing as well. Like when you reach that competition level, like some people think it's, you know, very isolating, same as the gym. Some people think it's very isolating, but it is just this big community of people that are ultimately supportive, right? And, you know, let's say in a powerlifting meet, sure, there's, you know, there's going to be a winner. There's one person that, you know, lifts the most, but, you know, everybody is celebrated because you are, you know, reaching your potential at that time. So it doesn't matter if you're lifting 50 kilos, 100 kilos, 300 kilos, like no one really cares the number. It's all about the effort that is rewarded. It's like you tried pushing to your potential on that day in that moment in time. And that is what is celebrated, right? Yeah.
Mostly, honestly, you hear the absolute screams and cheers for the people that you know are brand new to it and are lifting, you know, their absolute max. That it doesn't really matter if it's a super light weight. You see it and you see everybody going around and screaming and filming it, and it's a wonderful thing. Like it's, where else do you get this kind of like positive affirmation, like, you know, positive like reinforcement, I guess. Other than at the gym, and also like in the environment that we work in, we're lucky because like every day I get someone going, oh my God, you're amazing. Oh my God. You know, I'm sure that a lot of people at work don't get that, you know, they don't get that feedback every day, that I'm very fortunate to have that. And so for me, the gym and the gym environment, if you ever think that it doesn't feel right, like the good thing about gyms is that there's millions of them. So wait until you find one that feels right for you. And it doesn't mean you have to chat to everyone. That's like, if you're someone who is quiet and introverted and stuff, that's okay as well. You just got to pick one where you feel fits you, you know, and then you'll start to feel all the things that I'm trying to explain.
Yeah.
You know, that sense of community, that sense of home. It's just that sometimes you can have the wrong gym. You know, I've worked at the wrong ones where you go, oh, the vibe isn't right here. And that's okay, because there's so many.
Yeah.
You get to choose.
I'm a sucker for gyms, even though at the moment I'm training in my garage. But I feel like sometimes my partner feels really embarrassed when she goes to the gym with me, because I just start talking to the receptionist, I start talking to the cleaner that's there, I'm talking to the PTs that are around. There's a guy that I say hi to every day, don't know his name, but hey man, what's up? What are you training? Cool, awesome. You start making friends. It's like, hey bro, can you spot me? Like, you know, those types of things.
Exactly.
And I feel like all these people, I don't know their names, but like I know their faces. I feel like I talk to them every day. And it's just an awesome feeling, because I think sometimes as an adult, it's hard to find that community again, right? You know, it's hard to find that friendship group, or, you know, meet people sometimes. It can be challenging. And even if you are the most outgoing, charismatic person, sometimes you're just never in that environment. And sometimes, you know, your closest friends are just people you work with because of the proximity location, right? To find a place where you can leave home, go to a gym and chat with people is cool. But you know, that can take time as well, because, you know, sometimes there is just that 24-hour gym that's never staffed, and you're maybe a little bit time poor. You go in for your half an hour workout and you need to run off to work. But then other times you go to group fitness classes, you meet people like yourself, and you chat with the person on next to you on your bike, and you're in it together, right? You're like, yeah, let's finish this together.
And that's awesome. And you can go, oh my God, what's this instructor doing? It's killing me. You know,
it's killing us. It's killing us. You know,
That's a lot of fun to do that sort of stuff, like to, you know, get that kind of community. But that's what I'm sort of noticing in the Facebook group, just getting started, you know, with the challenge. You can see that it's such a community. You know, if someone puts a question up, there's really 10 people straight away answering that question. So it's such a positive environment to even, you know, to begin your journey for the first time, that it's sort of replicating what I had, but like in a virtual form, which is where we live these days anyway. So it's so nice. It's really nice to have that. And it feels like very welcoming. And that's a good thing, because, you know, it's nice to have a little safe hub where you can go. And look, even when I was just introducing myself, I was like, oh gosh, it felt like going to a new a new gym or a new party or something and going, oh, well, you know, here I am. But everyone was just so welcoming. So you've just got to take that first step. So even me, I was like, oh, do I post this? I look a bit sweaty. I've just done my spin class. And it's like, no, just get out there. Just put it out there. So that's I think, what you've got to do, that first step. And then it's like creating content. It's like doing a marathon. It's like, it's one step after another and suddenly it all builds. You know, you've just got to keep going and you've got to have that dedication every day. You don't have to have motivation, but just dedication to it to keep going. Because the motivation thing, like all that, that sort of thing where everybody sort of goes, you know, I don't feel motivated today. It's like, oh gosh, I wonder, I reckon probably 50% of the time I'm not necessarily motivated. It's just I will do it and then I will find something within it that will make me keep going that day.
Yeah. Motivation is the biggest lie going around.
I reckon.
I think for me, I often make little lies to myself. So I'd say things like, oh, I'll just, you know, go for a run around the block, but I'll end up doing like a longer run, or I'll just go in and do one set of squats and I'll end up doing like three or four. And then I'll do the rest of my legs workout. So, and then I do that with life, you know, when I'm writing content, like I dislike writing. I'm not a great writer. I'm a better speaker, better with audio, but writing is not my skill set. So when I do go to write, I would say something like, oh, I'm just going to write like, you know, 200 words and that's it. Or I'm just going to go do one dish in the sink and I end up doing the whole dishes and clean the whole house, right? So I often lie to myself a lot to get things done, but it helps me with that, you know, daily grind, that daily dedication, where when I don't want to do it because the weather's crappy, I still go out and do it. And I think that's what you kind of learn over time when in the gym, when you don't want to do it, when you don't want to go for that swim, when you don't want to, it's, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning, I don't want to teach that spin class. It's like, okay, I'm gonna go do this thing, right?
I know, like the amount of times that I'm like, I could say, oh, Zoom isn't working today, and every single time I thought to say that, I thought, imagine those beautiful people that are waiting for me and they've gotten out of bed and they've managed to do it. And what, I can't manage to do it, you know, like, and then I turn the computer on and there's like 15 people. And I think, oh gosh, thank God I didn't do that. You know, so, but every single person, you know, has that, everyone goes through that. And I guess the champion mindset, that kind of mindset that you want to cultivate, is someone that will be able to find strategies to push through that. Mm-hmm. So it's not somebody that it never happens to, especially with what's gone on in the last like year or so. It happens to everyone goes through this at the moment, going, what is going on? So it's how do we push through this? And sometimes you have to be a bit selfish and go, okay, I'm going to take an hour right now, I'm going to leave everything, and then I'm going to come back to it later, and I'm just going to do what I need to do to get myself sorted out. So it's like when I used to write essays all the time, I never wanted to do it. So I would always do my research first and write all the footnotes out and have it all there, and then sit that there for like a week, and then I'd fill in everything around it. But it was like, I've done the footnotes, I've done the research, I've done that. So that's exactly the same way as I approach everything else. It's like little bits at a time. And for me, it doesn't have to be in order, as long as I bloody well do it, you know. And that's what I think has helped me to get to where I am now, which is a good spot.
Well, like, you know, if you consider every aspect of fitness, right, it's all about the combination of little bits and pieces, right? Like you can't expect to start a fitness program and be the world's best squatter, be the, you know, the most cardiovascular person going around, or have the biggest biceps or the biggest glutes or whatever like that. You can't expect to be perfect straight away, right? It's all about those little bits and pieces along the way. And you might have something that kind of looks like fitness, but then as you develop over time, you go, okay, well, I can make this a bit better, I can, you know, get better here, get better there. And then even, you know, you and I, with, you know, decades of experience, we're still finding ways to challenge our body and learn different things, and being like, oh, you know, what if I did this, what if I tried that, what if I read this, oh wow, this person's interesting to follow, I like their philosophy, and all these bits and pieces. So you're, I guess,
always learning.
I guess my like final kind of question here before we wrap it up is, you know, looking into the future, you know, you've kind of spoken a little bit about bodybuilding, and you got a bit of a show coming up in the future. Can you speak a little bit about your, I guess, future goals, or maybe some things that you might be interested in at the moment, or learning at the moment through your own training or through your own reading or your own interests at the moment?
Yep. So I am very focused for the April 24th show that's in Melbourne, because that's the Miss Fitness Australia, and that's coming down from Queensland for the first time in Melbourne. So that's very good of them to bring it here, because we weren't able to travel to compete. And it was sad to see the show go on without the Victorians. So I'm definitely doing that show, and I'll do the AMB and the IMBA as well. And so that's in May. So that's kind of like I said before, it sort of coincides, the April one coincides with almost the end of the challenge. So that's going to be a bit of fun to, you know, use to kind of all motivate each other in a way. So yeah, my goals are to do really well in those shows. I've accidentally had a year off because nothing happened here. So I have had a good year of growth and development. So I should be able to produce something fairly good, you know, which I'm only comparing it to my previous self, because that's all I can do. So I already know that I've beaten that person that was standing up there, but there were other things that I needed to do, which I'm still working on, which is, you know, refining presentation and posing and stuff. So that's something that I'm really working on as well. You know, business-wise, I'm heading in the right direction. So my very big thing is to make sure that I spend a lot of time, even though I'm going to be on social media a lot, and I still am, right, like all the time, I need to also read proper books as well. So that's one of my goals, just to sit there and read the books and switch off and read and touch books and spend time doing that, and spend time with my girls and be well-rounded, because I feel like the fitness and the nutrition side is under control. So it's like the sleep, the self-care side of it needs to make sure that that all fits in as well, and that I'm not rushing around like a headless chook.
Because this
next step in my career will actually allow me to you know, have a voice in a really good way. And I can relax a little bit too in terms of that, because once I start producing and, you know, engaging, that'll just be amazing. So that's this year. So that's, and then of course I've got the half Ironman at the end of the year, so that I'll end with something completely different. But first it's about retaining as much muscle as possible. So I've got to make sure I, you know, just stay on top of all of that. But they're just mini goals. And, you know, I'm always chasing the best numbers I can in the gym, but you have to let that go when you're doing bodybuilding. You have to go, it's not about strength, it's about the way you look. For me, it's not not always just about, it's not looks, it's just about creating something, and it's just it's just happens to be you.
So, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So what are you reading at the moment?
I like to read a lot of fiction stuff. So but my husband's he just showed me two books that I ordered. So one is Girl on Fire. So I'm going to try that one. And I think that's going to be really good. So I like to read a lot of ones about just women finding their voice unapologetically. So I like Brené Brown. I like to read about also.
Yeah,
about
I've got her books back there.
Yeah, she's really good. I like to read about how you can be vulnerable and authentic, you know, and that, and people actually resonate with your authenticity. So you don't have to hide who you are. You can actually be vulnerable and say, like, I've had a shit day today. You know, I was like nice and vulnerable in this interview where I said, look, I'm not always freaking perfect. And that's hard for a type A person, like somebody who wants to, you know, lead and be so good at everything, to say, no, I have really crappy days. You know, I'm already kind of practicing what's in those books, which is just be authentic in your vulnerability. You know, that's what you've got to do. People have to share that a little bit more with each other, because everyone goes through it. And if you fake it and pretend that you're all over it every day, people will never be able to measure up to something like that, because it actually doesn't exist.
I love that. Look, Nick, let's wrap it up there. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and I'm sure we'll be having lots of chat similar to this moving forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. That was really good. Thank you.
See you guys. See you.